Well, this story has certainly been around for a while. Iran wants a nuclear bomb, but the U.S. and a number of nuclear industrial nations say no. But the latest headline, Iran agreed this week to swap some of its low-enriched uranium with Turkey and Brazil for fuel rods that will power a Tehran reactor that we're told will be used to make medical isotopes. Here's White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs speaking after Iran's announcement.
It does not change the steps that we are taking to hold Iran responsible for its obligations, those including sanctions.
But how much does a deal like this change the nuclear regime and the idea of relationships between countries regarding nuclear weapons around the world? Richard Rhodes joins us, Pulitzer Prize-winning author and nuclear historian. His forthcoming book, The Twilight of the Bombs, will be published in August of this year. Richard Rhodes, good morning.
Good morning.
You know, this deal may or may not happen. Iran is filled with all kinds of hesitations and concerns about proceeding or, you know, delaying its nuclear program. But the idea, the very idea of Iran making a deal with Turkey and Brazil, it seems to me changes the game.
Well, I think you're right. And it's interesting to see these two countries who have been part of the non-aligned movement stepping forward, offering Iran some kind of out. Although I think what's important here, this is really a kind of chess game, and Iran has said that it will continue to enrich uranium, even though by moving some of its uranium offshore, it sort of technically delays the amount that it needs to have on hand to make a bomb. So they're not really giving much.
Well, and indeed, the BBC yesterday on this program suggested it's more about the delay than it is about the specific deal. But I wonder if chess is the apt metaphor here. Maybe it's more like beach volleyball in the sense that we've got a lot of players on the field suddenly, and we're seeing a kind of proliferation, not just of nuclear technology, but of sort of nuclear diplomacy shifting away from the U.S. and France and the Security Council nations and moving to places like Brazil and Turkey.
That's a very clever move on Iran's part, because the nations of the South, as it's called, the part of the globe that's below the equator, have been, first of all, non-nuclear. There are no nuclear powers below the equator at the present time, and resentful that the North, and particularly the United States and Russia, have reneged in a sense on their obligations under the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. We have not made the moves until the present administration. We have not made the progressive steps toward the elimination of our nuclear arsenal that we pledged to do when we signed the Non-Proliferation Treaty in 1970.
And the START talk agreements are resuming this week, or at least on a preliminary basis. You've written about how the development of the bomb transformed the U.S. military. Gary Wills has this terrific book out recently.
Yes.
About how the bomb has transformed the presidency itself. We're beginning to see some really deep changes that the nuclear era has made in the entire world order. I wonder if you'd comment on all of that.
With the introduction of nuclear weapons into the world, we moved to a world where it's no longer possible for countries to risk large-scale war. One of the most dramatic graphs I've ever seen shows the exponential increase in the number of deaths from war from the 18th to the 20th century, and it drops off from a high of about 50 million in 1943 in the middle of the Second World War to about 1 to 2 million deaths per year after 1945, and it's stayed that way ever since, despite the fact, of course, that with the exception of the end of the Second World War, none of these nuclear weapons have ever been exploded. You have to ask yourself what that means. What it clearly means is nuclear weapons have established a sort of limit on national sovereignty, so that countries that previously would have perhaps gone to war over their conflicts have found other ways to deal with those conflicts.
But the
we're still seeing the cascading effects of those, of that dramatic change in world events today, in this, in some ways, simple-minded, I would have to say, struggle to prevent small, not very powerful countries from acquiring a minimum nuclear arsenal of 1 or 2 or 3 or 5 nuclear weapons when the great powers of the world still have thousands. What's most moving and interesting about this new treaty agreement is that the two leading nuclear powers in the world, which between them have more than 90% of all the nuclear weapons in the world. I mean, clearly this issue is basically about the United States and Russia,
right,
in terms of eliminating nuclear weapons. They have agreed with this agreement to move to only 1,550 weapons each, and warheads, I should say. That's a lot. But it's nothing like where we were years ago, and it's a trend that continues in the direction of what has been President Obama's stated official position, which is the eventual elimination of all nuclear weapons in the world.
But I'm wondering if you would see as a progressive big idea here, maybe a move away from just the U.S. and Russia eliminating nuclear weapons, but maybe more of a language that says we don't fear proliferation because the severe reductions in wartime casualties that you alluded to moments ago, we can manage proliferation, but we have to be much more aggressive about it, which would argue against these sort of tit-for-tat kinds of Iranian issues that constantly dominate the headlines.
I think that the United States is continuing near hysteria over countries like North Korea reflect another trend in these politics domestically since 1945, and that has been the use of nuclear fear as a kind of a threat inflation process that tends to get people elected to office who are more hawkish rather than less.
Huh.
And both parties have used it, but in the recent years it's been a particular specialty of the Republican right. To that point, and specifically, Senator John Kyle, who's of course been most resistant against these treaties, has announced that he will only endorse the ratification of the treaty, which is yet to come, if the United States basically spends, and the administration has announced that it plans to spend $180 billion to modernize the nuclear weapons complex.
Well, nuclear fear very much still with us, and the nuclear weapons, even though they are declining. Richard Rhodes, Pulitzer Prize-winning author and nuclear historian, talking about changes in the nuclear regime in the 21st century. Thanks so much.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.